Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
It requires a very good electron microscope. These structures are really very small. They're about a thousandth of a millimeter. So we use the term human hair as a scale, but bear in mind 100 of these can fit across a human hair. So they are really, really tiny. And so it takes a lot of work scanning around the specimen.
That's Dr. Mike Benton of the University of Bristol in England talking about a feature discovered, they say, on fossilized dinosaurs, leading them to conclude that the dinosaurs, maybe not all of them, but some of them, were feathered, and leading them to further conclude that dinosaurs eventually did not so much go extinct, but some of them survived and continued to evolve, a la natural selection, eventually becoming birds today. From dinosaur to bird, and they claim also in China to have found a bird-like dinosaur with not two wings, but four wings, feathered all over, probably flew, they say, and again, they're claiming it's a transitional form between reptile, or I should say dinosaur, and bird. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll start this hour of Issues Etc. on this Thursday afternoon, January the 28th, talking with Frank Sherwin of the Institute for Creation Research about the discovery in China of a bird-like dinosaur, and then some speculating about the feathers that dinosaurs wore. Then Pastor Todd Peppercorn will be our guest for part four of our five-part daily series on the Complaint Psalms. Today, we'll look into Psalm 88. Our call-in number for the next hour, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, or you can Twitter us at @issuesetc. Frank Sherwin is Senior Science Lecturer for the Institute for Creation Research based in Dallas. Frank, welcome back.
Thanks a lot, Todd. Appreciate it.
All right. First of all, so we understand what's being claimed here, what is the latest, bright idea about the link between dinosaurs and modern-day birds? What is the standard kind of boilerplate evolutionary argument there?
Well, basically, evolutionists have no choice since they don't believe that birds were created in day five and that dinosaurs are created in day six, and that, you know, God says in Genesis 1:21 that he created every winged bird after their kind. They dismiss that out of hand, and so they must go with the only other alternative, and that is that dinosaurs evolve by random mutations, that is, genetic mistakes, and this cryptic process called natural selection turning into, quote-unquote, birds that we see today, even to the extent of the tiny bee hummingbird that we find from Cuba that can make its nest in a hollowed-out golf ball. All of those birds, allegedly, according to evolutionary philosophy, came from dinosaurs. We would put up a significant red flag and say that that's not only anti-biblical, but it's unscientific as well.
In that vein, if you would, tell us what they claim to have discovered in China. They say a bird-like dinosaur with not two, but even four wings.
Right. Allegedly, according to CNN in London, England, they say scientists have uncovered startling new evidence which definitively shows color feathers. Certain dinosaurs were reddish-orange, the color of their feathers, alleged feathers, I should say, and that they were supposedly four-winged as well. And so that's some of the latest. Let's see, Hong Kong Reuters news service says that Chinese research have unearthed a fossil of a bird-like dinosaur with four wings in northeastern China, which they, and here's the key word, Todd, suggest suggest is a missing link in dinosaurs' evolution into birds. So right at the get-go, this is nothing more than a suggestion, again, by the evolutionary community.
All right. I know that even when I was a kid, there was this tree-dwelling reptile thing, and we often saw pictures of it in encyclopedias, a kind of feathered-looking lizard thing that was supposed to be halfway.
That was Archaeopteryx. That was found just a few years after Darwin published his infamous On the Origin of Species that was published in 1859. And he had made the prediction that, number one, that the fossil record did not support his strange theory, but that as research continued, the fossil record, the paleontological facts would unearth evidence of his theory. That's when, as you just described, this strange-looking reptilian-like, bird-like creature, Archaeopteryx, of which there have been several specimens found, was unearthed, and it convinced a number of people that maybe reptiles did turn into birds. And I should add, Todd, that Archaeopteryx has wings, it had wings, it had feathers, and it flew. It was 100% bird. No indication of it having been a transition from a reptile into a bird.
Why is it asserted then that with that, or with the fossil that's been discovered in China, that these are what the halfway houses between the two species?
Well, again, Todd, it's the only show in town. The evolutionist must have their evidence for what I call vertical evolution or macroevolution. And so you've got to make a connection between the reptiles slash dinosaurs and the birds. And so this seems to be, according to evolutionists, some of the best evidence that they have. But, of course, we understand that God has created quite a bit of animals on this planet, a number of which have experienced extinction in the thousands of years of this Earth's history, and so therefore we do find unique creatures there. But again, you have to use the fertile imagination of an evolutionist to somehow make what they call a phylogenetic tree, that is, an evolutionary tree that would somehow connect all these creatures together.
We heard from Dr. Mike Benton of the University of Bristol in England. He's talking about how these microscopic feathers or feather-like hairs or something are found on these fossils under an electron microscope. I picture something with big fluffy feathers on it. That would be kind of convincing. Is this grasping at straws?
Well, I think it is, Todd. First of all, I know of Mike Benton, having studied his latest issue of his paleontological textbook on paleontology. He is an overt evolutionist, and no surprise there. And I've enjoyed very much reading through his textbook almost a magnifying glass. Speaking of which, with this use of the electron microscope to look at these, I would call them probably structures. It's about all that we can say now, maybe collagenous structures. We cannot make any definitive statement right now as to whether they were on their way, quote-unquote, to becoming feathers. We do know, for example, that when it comes to feathers and scales on a reptile, we find there is a very real difference in structure and in growth, and we have to be very cautious. I'm a zoologist by training. I've had a number of hours in the science of histology. Histology is a study of tissues, and there is a real difference between the scales and feathers.
All right. I wonder how long something like this has legs, no pun intended. How long a theory like this has legs, because there have been other assertions about transitions between two species made by evolutionists that have been abandoned. I don't know, probably dozens of them that have been abandoned. And this may be the theory du jour, but how much lack of evidence needs to pile up before they go on to say, okay, the dinosaurs evolved into something else?
Right. right. I think it would be good to look at the dismal track record of evolution in the past. You know, I know we're not talking about human evolution, but we look at Ida, we look at Ardi, we look at these other alleged transitions betwixt ape-like creatures and people, and we find that they've all fallen by the wayside, not surprisingly. Using the issue today at hand, we see the same situation as it applies to the alleged transition of reptiles slash dinosaurs into birds. I think of the greatest flap within the past decade, no pun intended, was Archaeoraptor. Archaeoraptor was put together by a peasant in China who took a long bony tail fossil and attached it to the body of a bird. Voila, you have a missing link, a long bony tail on this bird, a reptilian tail. Well, then it was discovered, and by the way, it was a Chinese paleontologist with the last name of X Yu who found that indeed it was something was put together by this farmer, and Storrs Olson, who is an evolutionist who is not convinced that dinosaurs became birds, wrote a letter to National Geographic, who broke the story and said, listen, you know, you should be very careful about how you say that reptiles evolved into birds, and Storrs Olson was vindicated. By the way, I met Storrs Olson a couple of years ago in Fort Lauderdale.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, what did become of the dinosaurs? I was down in Fort Worth over the Christmas holiday. I went to the Science Museum that's there. If you walk down the long hallway there at the end, is a pretty big skeleton. In fact, a number of them, but a really big skeleton. And there it is, all assembled, held together with some very sturdy steel framework, and it's standing in a pose that perhaps it may have assumed in life. It wasn't a brontosaurus, but it was a dinosaur of that kind. And I was looking at it thinking, wow. They had all sorts of comparisons of the various bone structures of this creature with modern-day animals, showing mostly the difference in size there. And it was amazing to see. But as I looked at it, I thought to myself, you know, it's really not that much bigger than an elephant. And if you had a really, really big elephant, I mean, an oversized elephant, it would probably match it in size. So size alone shouldn't impress me. What became of these huge and sometimes small creatures we call the dinosaurs if they didn't evolve into birds? More with Frank Sherwin after this.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
The latest edition of the online Issues Etc. journal is out. It contains an article I've written titled Legalism and License. How are these two really the same error? Find out with the latest Issues Etc. journal. You can also read about Pastor Brian Wolfmiller's journey from liberal Lutheranism and navel-gazing evangelicalism to the external promises of God in Holy Scripture. Get your copy of the latest Issues Etc. journal by sending your name and email address to journal@issuesetc.org.
Theology for blue collar, white collar, and clerical collar. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The CLCC has produced a new seminar to help people understand the structure of LCMS churches. So many people today are unaware of their church polity. This seminar can be downloaded for free from the CLCC website, www.theclcc.org. This is available for a seminar, a self-study, or presentations. And think about joining us. Members can download the PowerPoint version for free. Visit us today at www.theclcc.org.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope, Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Frank Sherwin, senior science lecturer for the Institute for Creation Research based in Dallas, is our guest. It's Thursday afternoon, January the 28th, coming to you live. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-6943. Email us here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. Okay, I was down in Fort Worth. I went to their science museum, and I saw a very large skeleton, all articulated in a pretty reasonable pose, long tail, incredibly long neck, and it was amazing, although I was struck by the fact that it wasn't that much bigger than a big, big elephant might be today. What happened to this creature if it didn't, or I should say, if its progeny didn't evolve into birds?
Well, you know, that's always a good question. And for the evolutionary mindset, you know, I'm not denigrating them, and that's certainly not the purpose of the ministry I represent. But I tell you, Todd, the evolutionists have a very imaginative explanations as to what happened to the dinosaurs, the demise of the dinosaurs. Was it a huge meteoritic strike that struck the Yucatan Peninsula off the coast of Mexico that set up a huge thermonuclear cloud, basically, something like that? Was it the fact that poisonous plants began to dot the landscape and they died of poisoning? All sorts of descriptions, but one description is missing, and that is a worldwide cataclysmic flood, which is described in Genesis chapter 6 through Genesis chapter 9. As a matter of fact, Todd, where we find these great dinosaur graveyards is that they are embedded in sedimentary rock units. Rock units are laid down by water. Indeed, the evolutionists have come to the creation way of thinking in a manner of speaking when they at least now acknowledge that there was a large worldwide catastrophe, this meteorite I just described to you, striking the planet and destroying, oh, it was a very selective extinction, destroying the evolutionists, not so much the birds or the fish or anything like that. But all of a sudden, we find the evolutionists are standing next to us agreeing that there was a worldwide catastrophe. Although they would not say a flood, that's exactly what we as creation scientists say when we go back to one who was there in the beginning who told us what happened.
I sometimes wonder if evolutionists had no prior knowledge of the Christian claim about six-day creation, or in particular, a worldwide deluge. If they had no knowledge of that, and they were simply examining the layers of rocks in which we find these skeletons of dinosaurs, whether or not they would simply unbiasedly say, "Looks like a lot of water buried these things at one point."
Well, as a matter of fact, just recently an evolutionist was quoted as saying, and I have it in my presentation now, where he did admit that this planet was covered with water, except he said for a few isolated instances, and then he went on to say, and he was right here in Texas, the PhD evolutionist who said this, he went on to say planet Earth from space would have looked like, he used the phrase, a water world. Well, certainly that's what we say, and based on what God said in Genesis chapter 6 through 9. So we find, number one, evolutionists are coming toward creation thinking and talking about a worldwide catastrophe. That meteoritic strike is a catastrophe with a vengeance, and certainly goes along with what it says in Genesis about worldwide deluge. And number two, they're beginning to talk about this planet being inundated with water to a very large extent, not completely, but to a very, very significant extent. So I think the creation way of thinking is making headway, even an evolutionist, although they will not admit it.
How much of evolutionary theory today is, when you get right down to it, imagination?
Well, we find that a lot. And going back to our feathered dinosaurs, we find an appeal to subjectivity and imagination that is almost rife and rampant through these articles. I would say that the two watchwords in when they start to draw and attempt to connect the dots is extreme caution when they start talking about this. Are they really incontrovertible proof that feathers had evolved in dinosaurs before birds took flight? There's no real way of knowing by looking at the record of the sedimentary rocks. Much of this, and I would ask your listeners, as they have maybe their old biology textbooks from college or high school, when they get to the section on evolution, and this is kind of fun, I have my children do this, use one of these fluorescent highlighters to highlight words that say perhaps, maybe, for some unknown reason, it has been implicated. You know, the subjective language when it comes to real vertical evolution is just shot through in these explanations.
Finally, then, when a friend, a coworker, a relative says, did you see on CNN about the discovery in China of a bird-like dinosaur, how, in a nutshell, should we respond?
Okay, in a nutshell, Todd, I would say the jury is still out. I'm very suspect that it's always in the same area, the same region, and even the same researcher, this guy by the name of, I don't know how you pronounce it, Xu, I guess is how you pronounce it, is the one behind it. Now, I'm not casting any lack of credibility on his part, but I'm saying, isn't it interesting that it's always in this one particular area in China? Shouldn't we find them in other areas as well? Also, the case has not been made that these collagenous fibers evolved into, quote-unquote, true feathers. Now, I know a little bit about feathers with the rachis, that central portion that goes through, the barbs and the barbules that birds use to zipper and unzipper a feather. You've seen birds when they preen themselves. We've not seen really good explanation of how one can turn into the other. So I would say to my skeptical friends or to relatives who are kind of on the fence, having maybe a Bible background, I'd say just wait for the other shoe to drop. The jury is still out. God is still in control. And I think a lot of these quote-unquote explanations will go the way of, for example, Ida, the fossil.
Or the dodo bird, maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Frank Sherwin is senior science lecturer for the Institute for Creation Research based in Dallas. You'll find a link to the Institute for Creation Research under the Listen on Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Frank, thank you very much.
Thanks, Todd. Always a pleasure.